The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And welcome to our Monday evening sitting. And I certainly appreciate the chance to come here and sit, meditate with you. I think it's a special thing for people to be able to meditate together. I know there are some people who prefer to meditate alone. And there was a famous, in our little corner of the universe, story about a Thai teacher who went to England to lead a retreat. He was a Thai forest master, spent years meditating in the forest, meditating in the temple. And and near the end of the retreat, some person who retreatant asked him, "Would it be possible for you to at least once come and meditate with us?" Because he would just show up and give his talks or instructions and he would go. And so he never sat with them, never meditated with the group. And so he asked, "Could you please, you know, come and..." And he looked kind of really surprised. Meditate with people? He'd done all his meditation alone. That's what he did in the forest or in the monastery where he lived in. It was kind of a foreign idea, for seemingly, it's just by the stories told. So here we are. We come together, we meditate. I know that for me it would have been impossible to have done the meditation practice that I've done, the years of practice I've done, without the support of other people that I meditate with. And even when I don't talk to other people, I feel like I learned from other people who I sit together with, and there's a resonance or a way in which we learn from each other in this kind of way. So that's one of the feelings I have coming out of meditation and seeing you all and sharing that. I hope it's something you appreciate as well. And perhaps also those kinds of sentiments are on my mind because of what happened in Aurora, Colorado, only a few days ago. And I think for many people in this country, it had a huge impact, this event, maybe some of you. And perhaps it would be not quite appropriate or right somehow to sit down and give an abstract talk on some obscure piece of Buddhist philosophy and to have you sitting there kind of wondering about this amazing, awful event that happened so recently in our collective psyche, hearts. The first thing that comes to mind in talking about the shootings in Aurora for me is that is not to talk about them directly, but the first thing that comes to mind is to say that Buddhist practice is meant to be a preparation for these kinds of events. Not in the sense that preparation, when they happen in our lives, that we're prepared to meet them, we're prepared for responding, prepared to being present for what comes up in us when it happens. And that Buddhist practice is not about discovering how to live blissfully, ignorant or aloof or distant from what goes on in the world. As if you're a Buddha, you can just, Aurora, Lenora, whatever, it's all the same. You know, just kind of stay kind of peaceful and it's all. But rather, I hope that Buddhist practice is something that matures people and develops their capacity to be able to meet this or be present for these or to be prepared for when these things happen. Buddhist teaching teaches that these things will happen one way or the other. They'll happen. In our society, in our world, in our own lives here. And they're not so distant, whether, I don't know, have anybody here been, personally you weren't there, I imagine, but anybody here know someone who was directly impacted by the shootings in Aurora? Is it all? No one? No one's talked to anybody in Aurora? It's one of the things that I've kind of been affected by the role that I have, the job I have as a teacher. I talk to a lot of people, and people often come to me and talk about their suffering, their difficulty and challenges. And it's happened enough times now that someone will come and talk to me about something that they were personally involved in, touched by, connected to, because of family, themselves, or something, that I had read about in the newspaper, some tragedy, some difficulty. And I look at the newspaper a different way now when I read it. I used to think the newspaper was about things somewhere else. And now I see the newspaper and say, oh, I should read this because I might meet someone. I could well be that I meet someone that somehow has been touched or affected by this in some strong way. So I don't know, someday someone will come probably here from there. So the idea of being prepared for your own death is what's often said, that meditation practice, mindfulness practice is a way to prepare for your death, so that when you die, you're ready. And what does it mean to be ready? You know, maybe for each person it means something different. I don't want to say I know what it means for you to be ready to die, but I imagine that for many people, it's to somehow come to terms with their fear of death. Their fear of pain, their, you know, all the, come to terms with all the unresolved issues in their lives that somehow would weigh heavy on them as they're dying. The amazing capacity human beings have to look death right in the eyes and not be afraid. And to look a death right in the eyes and have death somehow not agitate you or disturb you or concern you in some kind of way. The way that the Buddha talked about this in his kind of more mythological language is that the personification of death, Mara, he would say, either say, Mara, I see you, very directly, but sometimes he'd say, if you are free, Mara cannot see you. So death cannot see you if you're not afraid of death. So something like that. So that preparation for it, be ready for it, not to be kind of, you know, deal with your stress, a little bit of stress reduction, but to really deal with the great stress, the big challenges. And so in one way or the other, there's all these different challenges and that every human being is going to have. We share the challenges of life. We share it, you know, I think much more than we realize, the basic existential dilemmas and challenges, and sooner or later, all of you are going to die. Someone recently gave me, some people are here actually, gave me as kind of a gift for some teaching I'd done. You know, one of those nice wooden park benches that you see in the park or in the open space preserve, and it comes along with a little brass plaque, and it had my name on it. And I said to them, oh, this is great. I thought you only received these when you died. And one of the people said, no, it's enough to be subject to death. So it was an honor. It didn't say in memory of, it said in honor of. So the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, are we preparing? And to, independent of how we're supposed to think or react to, or respond directly to such events as an aura, it's a reminder for me, am I prepared? Have I prepared myself? If I'm not, if this is too distressing, too upsetting for me, or I run away and shut down, maybe I should think about how, for the next tragedy comes along, how can I be better prepared for that? What do I have to look at and deal with in myself? What do I have to let go of? What do I have to understand? What do I have to overcome? So the next time it comes, I can be there and maybe help my community and be present in a more useful way. So that leads to the second thing that occurs to me in terms of this kind of event. And this, I think, will hopefully bring our conversation more directly to what it's been like for you, or your thoughts, or your reactions, or your responses to this thing. And that is one of the responses that many communities have to events like this sooner or later, is they'll have a vigil, or they'll have a moment of silence, or a minute of silence or something. And there's been minutes of silence for Aurora already, and people have had vigil. It's interesting, the word vigil apparently in Latin comes from the word awake. It's just a nice Buddhist word, to be awake. To have a vigil, to be present and be awake there to what's going on. And I think of this kind of pausing for a moment, or having, you know, taking mind to vigil, is a time to for sacred pause. And I'm very fond of this term, a sacred pause, to give yourself sacred pause at really important junctions in life. Because in the sacred pause, it's a time for vigil, it's a time to be awake, it's a time to notice more fully what's going on. We have our reactions, we have a response, we have the situation. When the things are under control enough and we don't have to actively be involved anymore, to step back for a little bit and take stock. What's happening? What's going on here? Take it in more fully, understand it more fully. One of the ways of being respectful of things like this is to be willing to try to be more fully present. To bear witness is a term that some people like, but to understand it more fully, to be mindful, to investigate it, is a Buddhist approach. What's really happening here? Not to rush to judgments. There's already been embarrassments, apparently, for people in the news writing things about what happened in Aurora, and because they jumped to conclusions of what it meant or what it was about, and then now retracted and apologized for what they had to say. So one of the Buddhist approaches is to pause and look more carefully. What's going on here? So this is where I want to ask you a question. In a situation like this, or in this situation, the shootings in Aurora, now a few days later, if you really paused to really stop and take it in and to investigate and try to get a fuller picture of what's happening, what are some of the things that you'd pay attention to? What are some of the things that you would notice? What are some of the things you would turn, directions you'd turn to look, to understand, or to see, or to witness, or offer your presence to? So that's the question for you. And so I was hoping some of you would answer that question, and my hope is that many of you would answer it here, so that maybe very interesting for us to hear many different perspectives of, because I think there's many perspectives, many things, a whole wide range, spectrum of things that are worthy of our attention at this time. So what are they? What do you think of? And we have two mics, and perhaps if you answer and you can look around, see if someone else near you is would like it. Well, the first person, next person speaks with the second mic.
Well, my first thoughts are with the 12 people who were shot and killed, their pain, and then the nearly 60 people who were injured, and then all the others who were in the cinema.
In the theater, yeah.
And then the suffering of the family and friends of those people, and the ever widening circle.
So there's the people who were directly victims of it, either because they were killed or wounded or were present for that horror, and then to be present, to be a witness, to take it in, to be willing to turn towards it, and in a sense be with them, recognize it, that pain. And that pain kind of travels widely out into their families and friends and the communities where those people, who knew those people, right?
Yeah. And then I saw today the picture of the James, oh my gosh, Holmes?
Mm-hmm, Holmes.
When he made the court appearance, and the commentary was that he looked dazed, but I also thought he was probably frightened, and maybe he's coming to terms with the fact that he he has committed the atrocity, killing a six-year-old girl and all the others.
So one of the things we could stop and pay attention to is maybe the suffering of the person who caused all the suffering, the difficulties there. And that's something that many people are not willing to do or don't want to do or are closed to do, to also bring that in. I saw in one of the articles that I read about it that one of the pastors in Aurora on Sunday morning, I guess he gave a talk and apparently led a prayer service or talked about that even James Holmes should be the recipient of prayer. And so, you know, that's such being inclusive and taking in it all. So that's one other possibility. So other possibilities of things we can pay attention to at this point or bring our attention to.
There was a story this afternoon about...
Is the green light on?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
There was a story this afternoon about the mother of James Holmes, and I found myself being a little angry for her when a flock of reporters called her early in the morning to ask her at 5:30 in the morning, and she'd gone to bed not knowing that this had happened. And was asked how she felt about her son doing that, and I really felt badly for her.
Yeah. So there's also the family of this James Holmes. The ripple of pain goes out there, and so is it significant or valuable? Are there people in the world who are willing to stop and listen and understand and take in that suffering as well? And is that a noble thing to do, a dignified thing to do? Does that enrich us? Does that benefit us as a society to stop and take it in and be aware of it? Do we have the capacity for that? So what else? What else can we pay attention to? So if you can pass it.
Can I have a volunteer to take my place? I just realized I went to the chiropractor and probably don't want to walk around so much.
Yeah, someone else can. She wants to pass around the...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Just in addition to what the woman just said, is one more thing: is on the news, when they told the mother, she said that sounds like him, and that shocked me.
Actually, what she said was, "I think you have the right person," and now she's saying the reporter misunderstood her. Meaning, what she meant to say, what she thought she was saying to the reporter was, "I'm the right person. I'm the mother of that particular man," rather than. So she claimed she was misunderstood. Imagine 5:30 in the morning, you're sleepy, right? And such a news. So what else to pay attention to? So I mean, that's the one thing to pay attention to is the reports, the news. Are the news always accurate, how it's presented? The idea that just because it's reported in the newspaper, is that an accurate presentation of what actually happened? And apparently, or at least from her point of view, it isn't. And how many people have jumped to conclusions about her and about the whole situation based on perhaps a misunderstood quote? So do we stop? How do we stop and take into that account? How do we stop and read the news and perhaps have a question mark behind it? What's really going on here? I think that's a really important part of this vigil or stopping sacred pause, is to be willing to have kind of a beginner's mind, an open mind. Say, wait a minute, what's going on? So someone else. Back there is it was right behind you, if you could pass it there and then keep.
Is it working? Yeah. What it occurs to me is that through the media, through TV and movies and video games and so on, that a person might be able to get into a mode, and I don't know about his mental health, but where he felt that he was part of a movie or that he was the Joker or whatever. And it's extreme, but we can all feel depersonalized, I think, or depersonalize other people in a society where we're so caught up in the lives of fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Great. So let's restate it. Restate your statement according to the question I'm asking. So one of the things that can be pay attention to is the impact that media and television has on our society and the psyche. What is that impact, and how is that impact? There's a lot of opinions about that, diverse opinions about it. So, stop, pay attention, notice. Ask the question, what is the impact of media? It happened in a movie, right? It happened in the middle of a violent movie. It happened in a violent movie where the person seemingly was playing out one of the characters or something similar. So what's the impact? What's the relationship? How does this play out in our society? And what are the different, what goes on? Just what is this? And keep it, I think it's during the vigil time, the sacred pause, is not the time to have answers. Not the time to say, oh, this is how it is, but what's going on? Let me look more carefully. Let me ask, what's happening here? Are there different perspectives? What are the different perspectives? So, someone else. Who has the mic? Where's the other mic? Okay. Go ahead, Anne.
The sort of following up on what you're saying, I've been staying away from the media other than just, okay, that happened. And so when you started talking, my thought was, oh, geez, I really should be trying to stay open to all of this. But it's very different to say, okay, this happened, let's be with it, and then jumping to the meaning-making mind that this is what our society is, it's, whatever. And these are the new laws we should make, whatever. And that sort of meaning-making and sensationalizing is what I start picking up on whenever I turn on the media surrounding this. So I think maybe it has been the right choice to not let the media start what is already likely to happen in my mind.
So you can be influenced by the people who are already making meaning and opinions and saying this is how it is. So by not paying attention to that, you stay uninfluenced by those voices. And what advantage does that give you in relationship to this event? Not that it just keeps you away and free, but
right. Yeah.
How does it help you become a better, in that sacred pause I'm talking about now,
I think it just keeps it more as life has been lost, as opposed to look at the monsters there are in the world, and staying with the life has been lost seems cleaner.
Okay, good.
A cleaner place to be.
So for you, part of what you can pay attention to is something that's a little bit more primal, foundational about the human experience and how deep and painful this is, that maybe gets lost if there's a rush to the opinions and ideas and what should happen. And so for you, the sacred, maybe not paying too much attention to it directly, keeps you connected to it in some other way, a deeper way, a meaningful way. Okay, so what else? What else can we pay attention to? Okay, go ahead. So to restate it as an answer to my question, it would be, in this period of sacred pause, we open up and stay present and explore. Let me try to understand the people around me better. How do I not understand other people? How do I shut down? How do I not allow myself to understand my neighbor and my friends and other people's experience? And so how can I open up to this more fully? So that would be an answer to one answer to the question based on what you said. Someone else? Yes.
Right at the very beginning, when I was listening to the news, I heard a lot of firsthand testimonials, people that were there. And it came through to me that there was so much clearness, and people were there and were responsive and were awake. And the one thing I heard that gives me, I'm curious about is, one person said it almost felt like it was part of being there and it was supposed to happen at the very beginning when this man was dressed up and as he took the first grenade and popped it and it made people's eyes tear and they were coughing. But she didn't realize at that point that it was actually malicious. And
right.
And she actually thought it was acting out. And that's part of our society that we live in, that we all find pleasure in doing those kind of things in a fun, dramatic-like way. But I guess when I was first hearing everyone's people who were there and hours later talk about it so clearly, I just thought it was a really good example of people coming together and staying there for it and not running away and not being overwhelmed by emotions in a time when you need to be more level-headed.
So one of the things we can pay attention to situations like this then would be the goodness, the strength that people have, how people who are maybe, you know, ordinary people, whatever that is, who we can meet on the street, how unexpectedly in a time of crisis something clicks and comes together, and a tremendous courage sometimes comes forward, clarity, goodness, can come forth in that kind of way, and it's very inspiring. It's inspiring for me to have read some of the stories of people who helped others in this situation. And sometimes at the risk of their own lives, some people actually lost their lives because they threw themselves on top of their friends. So, so there's, and this is one of the things Obama said in his talk, right? That he talked about the goodness of people that have come forth. And so, and there's a lot of it. There's a tremendous amount. And one of the things to take in during this vigil time, this pause, to, what's going on here more fully, is also the what's called the first responders, the police and fighters and people who come and to help in ambulances. And not only is there tremendous courage and strength and generosity, I think, in people who have that kind of job and are willing to put themselves in that kind of risk and situation, but they also are dealing with the kind of something that is deeply traumatic to experience and be there. And so not only is there goodness there and that they're doing, that coming forth in them in that kind of situation, but then we also have their suffering that they have to deal with it now for probably the rest of their life. And so, the goodness, the dignity, the courage, the strength, the generosity, that not only people who are there immediately, but there are people, all over the country who are responding and coming forth in many ways. So what else to pay attention to? Yes. I forgot. Why don't you go? Okay, you can be next.
Noticed that I can pay attention to myself is the need to try to understand the motives behind James and why he did it, or if there is one reason or multiple reasons, and that kind of compulsion to try to come up with something that sticks, even though there's more facts to be learned and there's things I might never know.
So for you, one of the things to pay attention to is what happens inside of you and your rush perhaps to judgment or understanding or putting meaning on it. And so if you stop and just notice that you have this tendency, how is that useful to learn that part of yourself?
On one hand, it allows me to be more truthful about it because I'm more open to new information.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I guess I have to think about it
more. Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you. So your response is, how can I pay attention to my way of relating to others? Are there ways that I can relate to the world or to other people that can be helpful and supportive for people and maybe make a little difference if someone doesn't go off in this kind of direction? So I guess, you're speaking about your contribution to society. And are we citizens? Are we citizens of society together? Are we here to support each other and help each other? Or are we here mostly for our own pleasures and individualistic needs? So someone else, where's the other one now? you can pass that to there. You can be next.
So I remember I was in the gym in the morning, and I heard someone say, well, he'll probably end up in a mental hospital. And it started getting me to think about, if I could make a decision, what would I want to see happen to this guy? You know, he's going to go to prison, mental hospital, whatever. Would I want to see him practicing meditation? I mean, I saw these things come into my mind. Sense of either revenge or what would happen? You know, what would I want if I could direct the show, so to speak? And then something came up, and I realized I hadn't even thought about it much, but there is someone I know who's, and some people might know about this because it happened in this community, where her husband was brutally killed. And she has some ties to here, and I mean, it was well known in this area. It was years back. And I haven't been in touch with her. I saw her a while back, but it's been a while, and just makes me think I might want to reach out to her. And not now, but just at some time, to realize she went through this.
So this kind of event, pausing and taking it in, reminds us that this kind of things has happened in the past to other people, maybe people we've known. And have we kind of ignored it or forgotten it? And because this kind of pain can linger for a long time, forever for people. So is there some way of being respectful or caring for people who still carry those kinds of memories and scars? So that's one other thing maybe to notice. Yes?
Well, sometimes...
Green light.
Okay. Sometimes... during meditation, I feel this, that my consciousness is linked in with every human's consciousness, and I've talked about that with friends before, and it really seems like there is some kind of mass consciousness of the Earth's consciousness that we're all part of. And it's just something to pause and ponder that we are all part of this.
So one of the things to stop and pause is how we are interconnected and how we affect each other and relate to each other. And it's not out there, you know, it's not like them, you know, I'm here safely by myself and it's a them, it's happening to them. There's, I think, in a very real way, it happens to us. And so how do we take that in? How do we understand that? How do we hold it in a way that's useful for our society and for ourselves? Thank you.
When I was in Thailand, I noticed a strange thing. They have magazines there on shelves in stores that are all devoted to like horrific automobile accidents. Just mangled bodies and things. I couldn't understand what was going on. And in the same magazines, they have all this, you know, these Buddhas and, you know, you can send away for these amulets and things that are all tied in with it. I didn't quite understand. I don't know. You might know something about it. But it was an interesting journey to temple of a Buddhist monk named Potilak.
So if we may, because I'd like to stay on the question.
Oh, okay.
Because we're doing kind of a process here. I think it'd be nice if we just...
Well, this is part of it.
Okay.
I'll make it really quick.
Okay.
We went into a museum, and there was this incredibly peaceful monk who was the caretaker of it, and he said, come in and see my flowers. And he showed us in. We walked in there, and it was all like... mangled people, bloody automobile accidents.
The photographs, yeah.
I don't know if that's related to this at all, but I've just flashed.
Okay, so let's see. What other questions do we? What kind of answers to the question?
What I'm noticing about myself is the lack of reaction, the lack of response to the story. We've been hit left and right with stories like this through the media. Trayvon Martin is still going on with Zimmerman.
Yes.
The drive-by shootings and the gang violence in Oakland and in Richmond. The political mudslinging that's going on right now. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so when this story came along, I had no reaction at all. I had no response at all. And it made me wonder if I had become desensitized to it all. So for me, it's not even a numbness or a mixture of confused emotions that I have to untangle. It's literally I have to sit and wait to feel something because I've been desensitized.
Yeah, so again, the sacred pause is a time to also notice ourselves more fully, what's happening with us, and how are we responding, how are we reacting, what's going on for us. So perhaps there are people in our society who are numb and desensitized because it's so prevalent, so much of it's going on. Or there's also another perspective on the, you know, not being as impacted by it as maybe some people, is that some people live in little bubbles. And they're not really aware of what goes on in Oakland and, you know, some of these communities where there's so much violence and going on. And it's out there. But something about this event came home to them. So where have you been all the time? why does this event finally pop your bubble? And so some people can say, well, my bubble's been popped for a long time. This is just one more in a series of things. And I'm sensitive, I'm aware, but it's just, I'm not surprised. There's a variety of reactions. But I think taking careful account into our personal reactions is really important. What I've seen over and over again in these kinds of situations, that it can have a huge, these things can have a huge personal impact on many people. And rather than being aware and conscious and responsible for the reactions, they react out of that in some impulsive, habitual way, in a way that's often not so helpful. So the idea of stopping and really taking stock of oneself. So if I may ask you, you don't have to answer. So for you, maybe you're desensitized, maybe numb in some way. So in this sacred pause of taking time to see that, and how is that useful for you?
Well, I'm very curious, because at the same time I feel very detached from others, and so it kind of folds. It's kind of connected to that as well. And I'm sitting with sensing that detachment from my fellow human being
In the wake of this event.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that makes sense. You know, so one of the things to be aware of when we stop and pay attention to our own reactions is our reactions are often part of a process. And so there might be periods where there's anger and, you know, rush to blame, and there might be periods of going numb and grief and sadness, and it's kind of, and to allow these cycles and allow it to be how it is, so can be very respectful of it in the sacred pause. The sacred pause is a time to allow it to be. So I'd like to say a couple of words to finish here this evening. To me, it's been very meaningful in these kinds of situations, especially when someone has died, like in this kind of way, or anytime someone has died, is to reflect on what do I want the consequence of that person's death to be in me? And, you know, if the person knew the consequence in me, what consequence would they feel good about knowing it had? And would they feel bad about it? So what I mean by this is that if there's this tragedy in Aurora, but there was a tragedy and people died, I think it would add tragedy to tragedy if the consequence of their death was that I became more angry, more bitter, and more afraid. I think that if I died in such a tragic way and I learned afterwards that this is how the world responded, I'd feel sad. I would like that, I don't want anyone to die this way, but when it happens, is there some way that the consequence of that can bring out the best in us, our human beings? Can it bring forth our care for each other, our generosity for each other, our love, our kindness, our wisdom? Can it bring forth these really meaningful and wonderful capacities that the human heart has? And that's the choice that we have, we all have. Which of these two sides of our heart gets prominence? Which do we feed? Which do we cultivate? Which seeds do we nourish? And my hope is that a very meaningful way of responding to this is first to pause and take in the full range of how we feel, take in the full range of what our community feels, take in the full range of conflict in our community that this kind of event triggers. I mean, already there's people are in conflict about gun control. You know, it's a conflict. Oh, that came right away so quickly for some people. But it takes stop and pause and take it in. And in that pause, perhaps begin questioning deeply, how do I want to respond to this? What are the values I want to come by? What is realistic for me to feed and to cultivate so that my response can help bring the best forth, the best that the human heart has for all people, for yourself and others? How can this make it a better world? I hope that situations like this help us and motivate us in a powerful way to live our lives, to try to make a better world, a world where these things can happen less and less. And I think that that's one, hopefully, very meaningful way of responding to this. So I hope that this is meaningful for you. And some of you didn't expect to come here and have to go through something like this, but it felt to me like it wasn't appropriate to really, you know, not somehow address it. So I hope that this worked well enough for you to do it this way. So thank you.